He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
First topic for this week's show I'd like to discuss, and I'm solo, Jay's not with us today, is the coming electrification of vehicles from the standpoint of sports car lines of vehicles that drivers from the past, current, and I suspect nearby to far into the future include manual shift transmission to cars. I bring this up because Mini is going to go all electric by 2030, but they say in an article I read that their last combustion Mini is maybe in 2025. So I'm not sure where the disconnect is on that on the schedule. Mini Cooper is a vehicle that I owned for well over 15 years and was one of my favorite cars to drive, if only because it was small, very nimble, and had a wonderful engine, gasoline, and a six-speed manual transmission. It was fabulous to drive. I have a 95 Mustang GT convertible right now. It has a five-speed manual transmission, and it is wonderful to drive. There are going to be many people out there in this world of driving that are going to covet having a manual transmission car in their stable. But there may not be any manual transmission cars available to us after 2030. GM is going to go all electric. I don't know what that does to the Corvette if that goes all electric. You can't have a manual shift car right now because electric cars are basically single speed motors. I think there's a dual speed motor out there, but I haven't seen much about it yet, that will just basically eliminate the need for any kind of transmission shifter. So I don't know what's going to happen to these lines of cars like the Mini Cooper. I have read a couple of test drives of the electric E Mini, and it is all about fun. I watch Motor Week weekly on TV. They're usually up to date with test drives on vehicles, and they did a review of the Mini E, and they tried their best to be all positive about the Mini in that the drivability of the vehicle was very similar to the gasoline Minis of today that still exist, and yesterday, as it may be in 2030 or earlier, if Mini really goes all electric. But they did not mention anything about the fact that there was no manual shift transmission and that that might be a sorely missed benefit feature of vehicles like the Mini. You also have the Mazda Miatas. You have the Subaru and Toyota variants of a sports car with manual transmissions available and so on down the line, not to mention the Corvettes, although most of the Corvettes are probably being sold with automatics. I think many Mustangs are still being sold with manual transmissions. So that's my take on what's going to happen when we go all electric. I think manual transmissions will disappear. So anybody who's listening and has a manual transmission vehicle, they either bet to get the last version of that vehicle if they want to update it before they go into the 2030 and beyond. And I guess we're talking about a lot younger owners than yours truly is. But in any event, that's my thought about what's going to be lost when we go all electric vehicles. The other big news is that Jeep has put the reveal out on a revised or the Grand Cherokee and the Cherokee, not the Grand Cherokee and Cherokee, the Wagoneer has resurfaced as a nameplate for a coming line of three-row Jeep vehicles. And they are going to be eye-openers from the standpoint of they are going to be really upmarket with some vehicles in the Grand Wagoneer L. I'm going to correct myself all this show, I guess, are going to be over $100,000. In an article that I just recently have been reading prior to coming on the show here, is that they're going to try to compete also with vehicles like the Land Rover, Range Rover, the Mercedes, certainly some of the vehicles in the Mercedes, BMW, and Audi lines from standpoint of, but or the U.S. lines of three-row vehicles. They also mentioned the Hyundai Palisades and the Kia Telluride as competing vehicles, but that's going to be left for the Wagoneer version of the non-L and non-Grand Wagoneer version. There's going to be a lower end, which is going to be able to hopefully compete in price as well as features to the Palisade and Telluride lines of vehicles and some of GM's and Ford's products as well. But the Cherokee is going to be, the Cherokee, the Wagoneer is going to be a really fabulous vehicle for those people who can afford the upper levels. And they are calling it in this article the Grand Cherokee. It's actually the Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer, I believe. But in any event, we'll watch that as it comes online this summer and be available at dealerships. I'm going to try to get hold of one to test drive it. It's a vehicle that's much larger than the Cherokee, Grand Cherokee, that's currently on the road, or I believe it will be. But it's going to be loaded with technology and all sorts of luxury interior features to compete with the more luxury lines of the domestics, Ford, Chevy, and Fiat Chrysler, and as well as Mercedes, Range Rover, and the like of coming from Europe and other places. So automobile market, as we're going into 2021 or going through 2021, is going to have a lot of exciting, as far as they're concerned, vehicles coming online for all of us who pay attention to this kind of thing to look at, review, hopefully drive in the form of a lot of electric vehicles. And going forward, there's a lot that's going to be exciting for those people who can afford it, but I can tell you the prices are going up. We have talked about the average sale price of the vehicle being in the mid to high 30s for quite some time. It is creeping towards 40,000, I'm sure. The electric vehicles are going to be certainly in the high 30s to low 40s and up before you get federal and state tax credits, and those tax credits are going to be limited unless they are expanded by the current political administration. They will be limited to a certain number of vehicles each line, and then you lose the tax credits, which are as high as $7,500 if you purchase an electric vehicle that hasn't already reached 250,000 units of sale, and some have. Tesla is no longer, I believe, at least the Model S no longer has tax credits available. I'm not sure any of the other Tesla vehicles have tax credits available on them, but the new Ford electrics, Nissan electrics, GM electrics will all have a limited time, limited number of sales with the tax credits available unless they become more prevalent. And there's a lot of talk in the industry about how they're going to have to give or make tax credits available because people won't buy electric vehicles without them. That's sort of hogwash in my book. We don't have tax credits on any gasoline vehicles, and I know why the tax credits are there, but eventually when we go all electric, it's going to be just like we used to buy all combustion engine vehicles. So tax credits are a nice lure for a certain number of buyers, but I do not think that they will be the main reason you buy electric vehicles as we get more and more electrified throughout the industry. I'm a little concerned about the number of startup electric pickup truck makers that are trying to eye their position in the electric pickup truck market. There's no question that GM, Ford, and I think FCA Group will, I know the Ford F-150 is going to be quite an electric truck vehicle, but you've got Lordstown Motors, which is right now having a very bad publicity situation going on about whether they're even a viable potential company producing pickup trucks and or commercial trucks of different assorted lines, like parcel delivery vans and that kind of thing. And there's another vehicle, I can't think of the name right now, who it's planning to start pickup truck production maybe next year, 2022, by which time I think Ford and Chevrolet for sure are going to have electric pickup trucks on the market ahead of these other startups. Startups take a lot of capital, investment capital. They have to build or buy former plants closed down by the domestics or build them from scratch in the ground. And I think if there's already a variety of domestic manufacturers producing them, I probably, if I were in the market for an electric pickup truck, I would probably be sticking with the well-established regular makers of vehicles already making combustion engine pickups like Ford and General Motors and Fiat Chrysler, as opposed to trying something new. The Hummer is going to be very interesting, but it's produced by General Motors, and there's going to be obviously the power and the strength of General Motors behind the Hummer will make it a very interesting vehicle, along with the domestic pickup trucks that are coming on. But on a smaller pickup truck note, Ford is about to unveil officially. It's already been spotted testing on the Ford grounds in Michigan, but it's also been spotted on Hermosillo, Mexico assembly line, a pickup that's going to be known as the Maverick. The Maverick, for those of us old enough to remember that name, used to be attributed to a sedan way back in the, I don't know what decade it was, 60s or 70s. But it's going to be used on a small Ford pickup truck, which will be even smaller than the Ford Ranger, which are now called mid-size pickup trucks, not small compact pickup trucks. It's probably going to be more like what I used to drive in form of the Mazda pickup and Ford Courier pickups that were built by Mazda, also back way back in the last century. With that in mind, I think it'll be a very big seller. It's going to be priced, allegedly, it's going to start at below $20,000, which probably means $19,995. So much for that, because if you add delivery on that, you're over 20, unless they try to get the delivery cost within the basic thing, and it won't have any options to speak of, and people seem to load pickup trucks up with lots of options. I know of a few people around who used to buy Toyota, the small Tacoma pickup trucks, and they wanted roll-up windows and no power seats and that kind of thing. And that's pretty much gone by the wayside as far as availability, though I understand Toyota may still make a crank-up side window pickup option, or probably option truck, but you won't find any of them on dealer lots, except in very rare circumstances if new ones are even being produced that way. But the Ford Maverick is probably going to be a big seller. It'll come in two-wheel drive, I presume, hopefully rear-wheel, and all-wheel drive versions. And if it really does come in at $20,000, you probably can get a pretty well-optioned vehicle below $30,000, which would be a big seller if the truck is useful for anything more than light weight hauling, which it probably won't be because it'll be small and ride on a smaller frame and therefore not able to take on what the big pickup trucks can carry, which are boasted by many of the manufacturers now, towing and capacity and all that with the big boys. The mid size Ranger and the mid-size Chevrolet Colorado and Canyon GMC versions are also very very useful a very useful size. The big complaint that I've heard from people, and I've yet to see any of the mid-sized pickup trucks with plows on them, is that you can't plow with them. The old Ford Rangers you could plow with, but I know Ford Ranger fans that have plowed with are keeping their old ones because they can't put plows on the new Ford Rangers. I do not know whether the GM and GMC versions can have plows on them or not, but I must say I haven't seen any. I don't believe I've seen any of those vehicles with plows on them around our broadcast area since they've been out. All these new trucks, electric, the Maverick size, and the startups, of which there are more than two, although I've mentioned only two, on the drawing board somewhere in the world, are going to make for a very confusing market for some people if people will even go out and buy some of the upstarts that currently have no known reputation for reliability. But the electric cars are also going to transition the workforces in the automotive industry, and there are going to be probably a lot of layoffs in as we go towards 2030 as they transition to electric vehicles, because the number of parts in an electric vehicle are far fewer than in a combustion engine vehicle, as we have talked off and on this show in past episodes, because basically you're going to have a frame, you're going to have a body on it, you're going to have far fewer a dashboard with information-based touch screens that are going to be powered by computers, and you're going to have 2 to 4 electric motors probably in most of the pickups and electric vans that are coming forth, as well as passenger car vehicles, which will be the drive lines for these, which will eliminate the drive line as we know a drive shaft between the engine and the driving ends of each of the all-wheel drive vehicles and two-wheel drive vehicles are going to be gone from. We talked about how simple they will be to service. You won't have any oil changes. You won't have any greasing of universal joints, steering mechanisms, and the like you do currently in the current cars and vehicles that are being produced. That's going to require far fewer people on the assembly line to assemble them, probably, and robots are doing most of that anyways. And it's going to probably simplify the repair centers in the dealerships around the world, which will make it good for the dealers and maybe not so good for employment in this industry. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the employment sector. Safety. Oh, we still have chip shortage in the news, and we also have this week, or last week, as I mentioned, foam shortage, which is going to prevail for a while. As I said, the industry seems to be prepared to deal with it and are making sure that the components for the seats in the vehicles that are selling at high rates, pickup trucks, SUVs, and the like, are going to get both the chips that are needed to assemble those cars and keep the assembly lines running, and cars that have lower sales rates, which may be sedans, will probably be possibly in short supply, but they won't be being produced at such great numbers that they'll be too affected by the chip shortage while this exists. It seems to be that this chip shortage is going to be possibly a all-year 2021 year-long problem. So it'll make the news, but I don't think, as I said last week or an earlier show, that there are so many cars on dealer lots that very few people will even know that there's a chip shortage that's causing them not to find the car or vehicle that they want. At least as far as I can tell going forward. For example, the pickup trucks are going to get the priority for chips and probably seat materials ahead of SUVs and or sedans for sure, because pickup trucks are selling at a far greater rate and just about as fast as they come off the truck. They don't seem to last on dealer lots too long. We have talked about safety usually at the end of each show. Jay comes up with safety ideas, and I echo most of them, or all of them actually, and add my idea. Visibility is a big problem for non-cars and truck vehicles that are on the road. Jill talks about bicyclists. You can't see them, although I notice that the bicyclists are more apt to have fairly good rear lighting, and if they have front lighting, the front lighting is good for those that have that do a lot of biking on the roads, and those strobe lights that are white in the front and red at the back need to be kept in very good condition, which means they need to have fresh batteries in them, because when I go out with mine, I often find I come back and I fail to turn the lights off. The battery life is usually very strong in these lighting systems, but they will run down. If you happen to walk away from your bike, you're likely to see the front one going and turn it off, which is my case, but the back one may be blinking for, in my case, it's been like 2 or 3 days before, which tells you how often I don't bike. But good lighting is very, very important for bicyclists, and every bike should have front and rear lights on them that are bright. There are some bicycle helmets that have lights in the back, on the back ends of them. I have seen them. I actually have a helmet with it, but I would not tell you that light that's flashing on the back of the helmet that I have is very effective the way the independent lighting systems that are available for bicycles are. On cars and vehicles, I go back to the tires. You need to have good treads, especially when you're in environments that have heavy rain and or snow, depending on the season, because tires that have worn down treads are not very effective in both those conditions. And it is very easy to, if you're driving a lot of miles or you don't pay attention to the tread life, or tires get out of alignment, which will wear them very, very fast bad out of alignment situations, need to be checked by their owners far more often than I suspect they are checked. Tires, I've also learned, wear out just by sitting around and going nowhere, and mainly because the rubber dries out and the carcasses dry out. And if the carcass dries out, and I'm talking 10 years or longer, and I have a couple of vehicles that basically don't get many miles put on them, the tires look like they're brand new in certain cases, but the carcasses may not be, and they may be dangerous, and you will usually see that in the form of cracks on the outside of a tire down near the wheel, which would be the rubber drying out and starting to split in places. So tires are like ski boots to skiers. You know, they are instrumental in the safe operation of a vehicle on the road. And well-treaded tires are a must for heavy rain areas and heavy snow areas, such as the northeast section of our country.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.